Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Monday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community. We're taking some time out today to begin with inspiration to talk about current events, health news, and to read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine. Today is February 21, 2011. You're listening to show number 133. We've had over 15,000 listens to our show, and it's very heartening to know that people care and this is important to them. Thank you for joining me today. I would like to remind everyone this is a simple study session, and any listeners must consult their healthcare provider. You can also get onto the Blog Talk Radio website and click Twitter to tweet a note, put it on your Facebook and share it with folks that way. You can download the archives to your computer, your iTunes or iPod if you don't have 60 minutes to listen at one go. You can take it with you and listen anytime you have during the day or in the evening. If you are a professional homeopath and have colleagues, you may invite them to become a member of Homeopathy World Community and make sure that you fill out the profile application completely. We also completed the third Sunday night midnight meditation show last night, and it's a very short show and welcomed by many who need a respite from the work week or who are getting ready to go into their Monday. It's a time to breathe and to go inward, a time to rejuvenate our souls. And so today, I hope you're ready and up in the sunshine. The Homeopathy World Community Network is a by-invitation community of professional homeopaths and healers. For all others, you are welcome to join us on the HWC Facebook fan page. Everyone out there in the internet can read the forum discussions and the blogs that are on Homeopathy World Community, even if you're not a member. You just can't comment, but you can always comment on the Facebook page. Today's inspiration is, it goes like this, from Ralph Waldo Emerson. Is not prayer a study of truth, a sally of the soul into the unfound infinite? No man ever prayed heartily without learning something. And in celebration of President's Day, which is George Washington's birthday, I think that this man represents to the world an image of freedom and independent thinking. He was a leader of action and standing by his word. And that's why we really, all around the world, look up to his person. Here are some of the things that he said. Friendship is a plant of slow growth and must undergo and withstand the shocks of adversity before it is entitled to the appellation. And so we know on the internet we are perhaps timid about stepping into the waters of the internet and creating friendships. But I can assure you from the interactions that I've had, you can create lasting relationships and deep friendships and withstand all the shocks of adversity that may occur. Another thing that George Washington said is, I can only say that there is not a man living who wishes more sincerely than I do to see a plan adopted for the abolition of slavery. And I wonder what would George Washington say today if he was living in this revolutionary times, and see what's happening, not just in his little part of the world, but just across the oceans in all continents. George Washington also said, "I have no other view than to promote the public good, and am unambitious of honors not founded in the approbation of my country." So I believe he must have been quite a humble man and looking for the good in people and to promote good in all parts of his life. George Washington also said, "I hope I shall possess firmness and virtue enough to maintain what I consider the most enviable of all titles, the character of an honest man." And we know George as a young child and his story about chopping down the cherry tree. So I think he was true to his word, and we do look to him for that. I want to extend my gratitude to so many people who work in the background and yet need our appreciation and support. And I'm going to check. Marilyn is one of the people that I would like to send some gratitude and thank you for joining me today. Marilyn, I think you're on the air.
I am. Good morning, Deb.
Great. I also want to send a thank you to the sponsor, Roger Van Zandvoort, for showing his belief in HWC. Everyone on the internet is able to download for free parts of the Complete Dynamics computer program for repertorizing and figuring out the correct remedy selection for your homeopathic patient or for someone in your family if you take care of people at home. You can take a quick tour at www.completedynamics.com and read the documentation behind the programming. You can immediately use the free browser edition after you install it. And you can, he asks kindly, give a donation, because we know how many decades of work it has taken to create this program. And for those who are professional homeopaths, there is a practitioner edition for case management and analysis. I also would like to thank all those listeners who are in the chat, who come every week or intermittently, who download the archives. Namaste to Healing for Inner Peace and the other guests. We also want to tell people that we have a really cool online newspaper. Whether you are on Twitter or off Twitter, you can send people to this site and read daily updates. We have such great authors. It's at bit.ly, it's bit.ly/homeopathsdaily, and I want to give a shout-out to the contributors for retweeting, subscribing to it, and sharing it on Facebook. To give you an idea of the kinds of articles you can read, Dr. Andy Somati, who is a HWC member, writes about hibiscus tea, and that it treats hypertension, and this is a study by the USDA. Melanie Grimes, a well-known naturopath who has written many, many articles for Natural News, has written about tamoxifen, that it was reported to cause aggressive cancer tumors. And Trevor Sheffield, who mostly cares for vaccination-injured children, has written an article on successful careers and marriages are likely for many people with autism. That sounds very interesting. And we also have Tanya Nolte, who is another HWC member. These are all members of our community. She writes about zinc and how it can help fight colds after all. So take a look at those. Go to the Homeopath Daily link up and retweet it. I also have a big, big shout out to Victor from Budapest, Hungary, who is an administrator on HWC. He keeps updating the 1.5 million voices for GE Free Future and to sign the petitions. He keeps uploading many, many links to vaccination awareness to petitions and educational information about what's happening in our global world for pollution and how we can prevent it, how we can unify and strengthen ourselves by coming together with these kinds of works. I'm getting lots of hugs from people out there in the chat, and I really want to thank you for listening and sending me that nice divine love and blessings. I'm catching it. Marilyn, I wanted to let people know about the upcoming April 8th through April 10th, 2011, International Forum of Teachers, Cases, and Results. That's going to be at the National Center for Homeopathy, their annual conference in Virginia. It's going to be spectacular, a world-class event. I'm really looking forward to it. There's going to be a roster of speakers, like a who's who of world-class teachers, to the introduction of 21st century technologies like the worldwide webcasting and video reports from Africa, from Haiti, and from India. This is going to be incredible. You're not going to want to miss it. Speakers for the track on the International Forum include people, presentations by George Fethulkas, Jeremy Scher. We have a broad spectrum of homeopathic thinking from Hahnemannian teacher and practitioner Dr. Joe Kellerstein and Ann Vervechek. And from all over the world, people are coming in to the U.S. for this annual event.
Massimo.
Oh, I'm Master. Really... Dr. Yeah. Massimo?
Yeah.
Oh, there, I have a little...
Alistair Gray. Alistair Gray's coming in from, I think, Australia, isn't he?
Yes, we're having so many people from all over the world coming in. It's very exciting. I wanted to make a mention for those folks who are new to homeopathy. Some of the favorites are M.J. Hanafin and Miranda Castro. Everybody knows her name. They're going to be doing some sessions on coughs and their homeopathic treatment, common dental first aid issues, is homeopathy safe for during pregnancy, how to think like a homeopath, homeopathy for anxiety, a surprisingly effective approach, and confusion to clarity, learning which symptoms make all the difference, and, of course, homeopathic first aid. We could just go on and on, make a whole show about this, but we're going to keep going with our study. I just have so much gratitude for everyone who keeps coming back and learning with us and listening to the shows. I've heard so many positive reports and feedback. So we're going to, I didn't even talk about what's on the network in terms of blogs. There are bunches of things that I wanted to direct people's attention to. One of the things, I guess I lost my notes, but one of the things that I did want to say is there's a new article on there that I posted about pain and showing, and I talked about this in last night's session for the meditation, that even if a person is taking very heavy-duty pain medication, just by suggestions from the provider who's giving the medicine, the person's they will either not feel the pain medication and still feel pain, or they can improve and lessen their pain just by their own thinking. And that is quite an anomaly that the researchers are trying to figure out. How can they use this and understand the processes of the mind and the body and their people's emotions? It's what homeopathy is all about, but they might call it the placebo effect. I'm not sure. But to imagine that a person could be having an injection of a heavy-duty pain medication and it not alleviating any pain just because somebody said that they weren't really receiving that medicine anymore. Hmm. Okay. Do we want to go ahead and do a quick little review? Aphorism 165, it said that, if, however, among the symptoms of the remedy selected, there be none that accurately resemble the distinctive, characteristic, peculiar, and uncommon symptoms of the case of the disease, and if the remedy corresponds to the disease only in the general, vaguely described, indefinite states, for instance, if somebody just had nausea and debility and headache and so forth, and if there be among the known medicines none more homeopathically appropriate, in that case, the physician cannot promise himself any immediate favorable result from the employment of this unhomeopathic medicine. So what he's saying is the way that the homeopath selects the remedy is they must have these distinctive characteristics and qualities to go on to base their remedy selection. And if they just, over the top of their head, just give out something that's quite general, they're not going to be successful in most cases. And Hahnemann is actually calling this unhomeopathic practice. So that is kind of what we have just been talking about in our last session, that we need to have these peculiars and these characteristic symptoms that tell us how to understand and match the symptoms of that person, what is not normal for that person, to his disordered state. And then in aphorism number 166, such a case is, however, very rare. So Hahnemann is telling us it's very rare that we're going to come across a patient who's going to just have all of these very general wishy-washy symptoms. If they're in an acute situation and feeling badly, they're going to be able to describe to a T how they're feeling and give us qualities, sensations, what makes it better or worse, the modalities, the generalities. We're going to know from their description what remedy to choose. So he's saying, in such a case, which is rare, owing to the increased number of medicines whose pure effects are now known, which means that over the course of years, they had proven so many remedies that they had a really good toolbox of remedy of medicines to use for the diseases that were known in his day. And he says the bad effects resulting from it, when they do occur, so he also would know what would be some things that would occur when you give that particular medicine or remedy, and are diminished whenever a subsequent medicine of more accurate resemblance can be selected. So here again, let's say he's given a remedy that's not on target and it incurs some extra effects that are coming from the remedy, not coming from the individual. He says that then you do a follow-up subsequent medicine where you can more accurately select it because you can see the difference. You can see what went a little bit off. And let's see. We have quite a number of listeners today. If you have any comments, you can put them in the chat. And we have Healing for Inner Peace is called in. Oh, let's see. Hello. Can you provide us your name? Can you hear us?
Yes. My name is Mark. I'm from New Hampshire.
Oh, yes, Mark. You've visited us before.
Yes, I have.
Okay. And we're doing our study of Hahnemann's aphorisms right now. Are you familiar with them?
Not in depth. You know, I mean, basically, I'm a nursing assistant, and of course, I'm an energy healer. You know, work with that on multidimensional, multi-universal living light frequencies and so forth, like many others. So,
right.
You know, that's the nature of my work. Working with the holographic matrix when I need to, working with the quantum DNA level, all levels. So it's pretty interesting
right.
work.
So, okay, so we're going to let you sit back and listen to the show because Marilyn and I are going to go ahead and be talking about Hahnemann's way of healing through I call it his how-to book, The Organon of Medicine. Okay,
right.
So sit back, and if you have any questions, give them on the chat. Thanks so much for listening.
So Debbie?
Yes.
Hi. I wanted to say something because you were talking about aphorism 165, And it occurred to me that, you know, when you go from aphorism 165 to aphorism 166, where Hanuman says, you know, it's becoming very rare, right,
yes,
that we only have these general symptoms to act, to give a remedy to, because we're doing all of, you know, more more medicines are becoming known, more provings. Another way of looking at aphorism 165 is if the practitioner is only basing their medicine selection on those symptoms that are general, like if you're being really sloppy and you're not looking at what's distinctive and what's particular about that patient, then you only have yourself to blame if it doesn't work on them, because you're not being homeopathic. You're not taking a truly holistic view of what's going on with that patient.
Okay.
Okay, so in other words, there's two ways, you know, there's one way of looking at aphorism 165 is that the symptoms just aren't there. They're just general symptoms. So you
okay.
can only act on the general symptoms. And the other way of looking at it is, if you're only looking at the general symptoms.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So Good.
So here we have a question in the chat. Let's say some allergies are very common today. How would we approach, as a homeopath, looking at the symptoms of a person dealing with allergy?
So, for instance, we
just don't give Benadryl to everybody. We don't do across the board, you know, broad spectrum whatever. Say, take it off the shelf, and this is what you need because you have a labeled disease called an allergy or a labeled disease called asthma. No, we have to individualize our remedy selection. And that we know that there are thousands of remedies out there. So how do we do that? And here in aphorism number 165, Hahnemann says exactly that we're going to be selecting the similimum, the most similar remedy for that person. And we must be listening carefully to the gestures, the posture, what the person feels and what he says.
And how they react.
And how they react. That's right. So if we see that a person takes a bite of a pear and goes into kind of a shock or an allergy symptom, then we're able to look up in the rubrics, in the repertory, that when somebody is allergic to a pear, there are select remedies for that. Or if somebody is allergic to ragweed, or somebody,
you know, but the thing is that typically, you know, we're taught that you have to have three symptoms in order to choose a particular remedy. So
okay.
It's not just based on, and I'm not correcting you, I just want it to be really...
Clarify it for the listeners.
Clarified for people who are listening, so they don't just think that, you know, we just look at, you know, who's allergic to a pear. But
right.
We base our prescriptions on a mental symptom and two other symptoms that patient generates in order for us to make a prescription work. So, you know, that's really important for our listeners to understand, and for you and I, of course, to understand that's what we need to do. Right.
And I wouldn't even give it a numerical. I mean, we always think of the number three as being most potent, most important, because it's the three-legged stool, the most secure form ever. However,
but that's the minimum, right?
It would be the minimum, and we also have to understand the individual. We could be looking at their physical symptoms. We could be looking at what Hahnemann is saying in aphorism 165. What is distinctive and most characteristic in this particular case? What is peculiar and uncommon? What is the change that occurs in the individual when they're not having an allergy reaction? And then what that's their good state? And then what happens when they all of a sudden have a flare-up? what's going on, what are the changes, and the person is probably going to be very eloquent in being able to describe their type of symptoms, whether it's upper respiratory, whether it's a headache, whether it's digestive complaint, whatever it might be, they're going to be able to give us the clues.
And it's really the most opportune time for that person to be treated is when they're having an acute, when they're having an asthma attack, when they're having an they're in the middle of the allergies, so that that we can see how did they react. You know, if their eyes are tearing, we can ask them all these different questions that are pertinent to the materia medica. So, are the tears acrid? Are they bland?
Exactly. These are things that people might not think about, but to say my the tears are burning or they're not burning, it's really a good distinguishing factor.
So it's really good for us to be able to see that patient in front of us as well. That's why a lot of us, although we say that we treat people all over the place, it's good to see that person. Actually see what the person looks like while they're talking to you and what's going on with them so that we can prescribe properly.
Exactly. And for those who have missed our beginning shows, we're up to 133 already, we talked in depth about observation, about being a good observer, and that's how you get your clues, using all of your senses. So I hope that answers the question about finding a remedy for a person who is allergic or who has asthma. It's the same in no matter what the labeled disease or the situation. We take it case by case, and we look at the individual symptoms and how they're doing.
That is why homeopathy is a holistic therapy, because it is individualized. And we have to take that whole person into account, mental, physical, emotional.
Yes. And
it's the only holistic therapy there is.
Well, there are others, but I think it's probably the top. Let's go to aphorism number 167. It says, thus, if there occur during the use of this imperfectly homeopathic remedy first employed, accessory symptoms of some moment, then, in the case of acute diseases, we do not allow this first dose to exhaust its action, nor leave the patient to the full duration of the action of the remedy, but we investigate afresh the morbid state in its now altered condition, and add the remainder of the original symptoms to those newly developed in tracing a new picture of the disease. So we are going to reiterate, the last number of aphorisms have been dealing with an acute situation, something that is just coming, it's short-lived, it's not a chronic state. For asthma, I consider that chronic. So that is dealt with in a slightly different manner. Here we know that the professional homeopath has to be on his toes, on her toes, and really looking at what is occurring in the immediacy of that moment. So, Marilyn, do you want to reread that again and give your interpretation of what he's saying?
Sure. Thus, if there occur during the use of this imperfectly homeopathic remedy first employed, accessory symptoms of some moment then, in the case of acute diseases, we do not allow that first dose to exhaust its action, nor leave the patient to the full duration of the action of the remedy, but we investigate afresh the morbid state in its now altered condition, and add the remainder of the original symptoms to the newly developed in tracing a new picture of the disease. So what he's saying is that, in an acute, if you're using an imperfect remedy, right, a remedy that's not the similimum, don't let the remedy act to finish its work, because the longer that you wait, the longer it's going to take to heal. So if there are accessory symptoms, then you use them, and the symptoms that are left over with a new remedy after reexamining the case, then you treat them as well. And I mean, I learned, we call that the zigzag method. Have you ever heard of the zigzag method, Debbie?
Yes, I have. But I think he wouldn't, I don't know that he would call it that.
No, we call it that because we're...
Yeah, I think that he's giving us instructions on what to do when we didn't get it right the first time, right on target, a bullseye, and we're a little bit off, so we want to get closer in. Let's take another arrow out of the bag and shoot it. So what are we going to do?
You treat it, whatever symptoms are left that are left, you treat them with another remedy. You don't let that first remedy keep on working because it's not necessary. You're in an acute stage.
Right. And so many times folks who are familiar with going to a homeopath will know that they get a remedy and a month later or something like that, they might go in and get another remedy, or even 6 months later. And so this is a different way because it's an acute situation and we have to take care of the immediacy of something that is needs to be taken care of right away. And therefore, that's why he's saying keep a good observation of what's going on with that patient and change your remedy selection or change the dose. Or, you know, do something that's going to not go fully to the end, like you said, with that one remedy. You don't have to wait another week or so. Do it right away.
How long do we wait? That's the question.
Well, that's a very good question.
Acute,
I think it's on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, because when you're working with acutes, it depends on how acute the situation is as to how long are you going to let something last. Right.
Well, also, we have to realize in previous aphorisms, he's told us about when a remedy is good, you might have a too strong of a potency and you're going to get an intensity of the same symptoms a little bit more developed. And so this is something you can say, okay, we might make an adjustment with the potency level. But we're going to stay on the same remedy. So I think that that's kind of advanced. It's an advanced question. Just to know timing. Timing is an art. Homeopathy is more than just a skill. It's more than just science. It is an art and understanding your patient and being able to have that knowledge of when it is good just to let it go a little bit further or when it is good to make a change.
And you know what? That's when we have to know about Herring's Law, right?
Herring's
Law, right. Where if it's curative, where it's heading, how far, you know, how are we doing? You know, are we making it better or are we making it worse?
Yes. Okay, so we have here...
You want to do or aphorism 168?
Well, we have a question in the chat right now.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Let's take a quick look at that and see what we can say to Mark. It says his 13-month-old granddaughter has a problem with dairy. She has diarrhea, so we have her on soy. And so this is probably of a chronic condition. This is a long-term condition. It's not just a flare-up, a one-time thing like falling and getting a bump or a bruise or getting into an accident or cut in a scrape. This is something that is her inner constitution if she's having difficulty with, which requires a complete consultation and understanding that child, her family relationships, and other things that are possibly in her environment or her diet. So there's it's multifaceted, and that would be on a case-by-case basis. And hopefully there would be some remedy that would assist that child to heal.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of success with people who have problems with dairy. homeopathically, but it is it is something that needs to be done, not as an acute, but as a chronic condition. Debbie, do you ever say anything about people to people about soy?
I don't. Oh, I usually, the only thing that I say is only eat fermented soy, because I don't like the phytoestrogens in regular soy, at least personally for myself.
Yeah,
and
me too.
So I eat tempeh and miso and those kinds of processed soybean that have been fermented to be actually healthy for you, because we know fermented products help the gut. But
right.
I don't do any regular soy.
Yeah, me neither. For the same reasons. But a lot of people don't realize that about soy. And it's important to know that.
I'm gonna check onto the HWC. I guess there's no listeners over there. Everybody's on the Blog Talk Radio website for listening to this chat today, to listening to this radio show. So we're up to aphorism number 168. Would you like to, do you have it in front of you?
Yep, just a sec. So 168. So we shall then be able much more readily to discover among the known medicines an analog to the morbid state before us, a single dose of which, if it does not entirely destroy the disease, will advance it considerably on the way to be cured.
And thus?
Sorry. I'm reading it silently again to myself, because, you know, the English is so different for me that I have to think about it. And thus we go on. Even if this medicine be not quite sufficient to affect the restoration of health, examining again and again the morbid state that still remains and selecting a homeopathic medicine as suitable as possible for it, until our object, namely, putting the patient in the possession of perfect health, is accomplished.
Okay, so he's saying that we shall be able to more readily discover among the known medicines, because I think he keeps harping on that he wished maybe he had more medicines at his disposal, but he says, okay, we've got this batch of medicines that we do know every single thing about. They've done such incredible research and understanding of their medicines, like they are their friends. And analog to the morbid state, so an analog means that it's the most similar to this diseased state. A single dose, and he loves if he can give a single dose only and let that ride and let that cure. But if it does not entirely destroy the disease, and he usually uses the word annihilate, which I love, it's such a powerful and strong word. Today he's using the word destroy the disease. He just wants to get it out of there. Will advance it considerably on the way to be cured. So even though it's not going to knock it out completely, it's going to do some kind of effect on the vital force of that individual to help it along. And thus we go on. If even
and
this medicine, go ahead.
I was just going to say that from what I'm getting from my understanding of it, and also the notes that I've had from previous. All my learning is that, you know, in this, what you do is that as you're choosing a medicine that's even closer to the similimum, right, which I call the zigzag method, that you keep getting closer, but you're always reexamining the case. You're always going through and say, okay, what are the, you know, how about these symptoms that you had, and what's left, and what have you got now? And as you do that, you prescribe on what's going on. You never presume what the next remedy is going to be, because you're always looking at the case and saying, okay, where are we right now? What have we managed to annihilate, in Hahnemann's words? And what's left over? What are the symptoms now? Never, ever sit down and say, well, I know that the next remedy is going to be such and such.
Right.
Always
so we make no presumptions, even though he was very good at, with the knowledge of the remedies, which ones are companions to each other, which ones follow up good for each other. He
right.
had that knowledge and that store of information in his knowledge base.
Right.
But,
and we check it. And you know what else, Debbie? Because we're dealing with an acute, we're talking about acute, the symptoms are going to be right in our face. It's not like a chronic case where, you know, you ask a question and they can't really answer, they're not sure. You know, they're not, you know,
they hem and haw a little bit because
yeah.
they're trying to find the words, or they're trying to understand, do I remember such and such?
That's
but they're not
right,
going
right.
to be wishy-washy about it because they're in a painful situation or an emotionally stressful situation or a place in their life that they are desperate or stuck or have to run away. It's something that they're dealing with at the moment. They're facing it, and therefore they're enabling us to see what it is that they're coping and dealing or not coping with and dealing with at that moment.
Right. So we get the symptoms very clearly from them, and that's what we're prescribing on.
Good. And so he's saying examining again and again this morbid state, so the person's not going to be able to say, oh, this thing has been lifted from me and I feel wonderful and such doesn't bother me anymore and my headache is completely gone. It's you just keep examining and asking, has the pain in the leg gone? You know, you can actually ask them if they've given you information originally, and you can, like a checklist, like a feedback. How is this? How is that?
That's the importance of taking good notes.
Yes, taking very good notes.
Yeah.
And sorry,
Debbie, you know, we could find, I mean, I found this in my own experience that sometimes I'll get a symptom, let's say pain, and then I'll get a modality. Well, you know, it hurts all the time. And then when they come back, I'll ask them about the pain, and they'll say, well, yeah, I still have the pain. And then I say, well, is it all the time? And they say, you know what, actually, it's not all the time. It only happens at this particular time. And the same thing would also happen with location. You may get a pain. Well, I've got a pain, and it's all through my chest. And then when they come back and say, well, how's that pain all over in your that's in your chest? And we say, well, I still have the pain, but you know, now it's only here in this area.
Uh-huh.
So
right.
You get really great, clear pictures of what's going on in
right.
an acute.
That's the difference in homeopathy, the way we listen to the patient and try to understand it and put the whole thing together. I think we can go ahead to aphorism number 169. And if you wouldn't mind reading that.
Okay. So if on the first examination of a disease and the first selection of a medicine, we should find that the totality of the symptoms of the disease would not be effectively covered by the disease elements of a single medicine, owing to the insufficient number of known medicines. It's interesting, isn't it, how he keeps on talking about not enough medicines.
Yes, I think that is bugging him.
Yeah, it really is. And that bugs us, and we have so many more thousands than he did. So isn't that funny? We're always trying to prove more remedies. Okay, so that there are two medicines, but that two medicines contend for the preference in point of appropriateness, and that's happened to me many times, one of which is more homeopathically suitable for one part, the other for another part of the symptoms of the disease. It is not advisable, after the employment of the more suitable of the two medicines, to administer the other without fresh examination, and much less to give both together.
No, we don't. We only do one at a time.
Yeah. for to administer the other without without fresh examination, and okay, much less to give both together because we're not doing that. For the other medicine that seemed to be the best would not, under the change of circumstances that has in the meantime taken place, be suitable for the rest of the symptoms that then remain, in which case, consequently, a more appropriate homeopathic remedy must be selected in place of the second medicine for the set of symptoms as they appear on a new inspection.
Mm-hmm. So he wants
In other words, you give one that's the most suitable. You give one, and you wait and you see what happens with that, and whatever you're left over with, you give another remedy.
And he wants to make it clear and not confuse anyone that we're not giving two at the same time, because maybe somebody might confuse that in the previous aphorism where you don't wait, you just give the next one because it's an acute situation.
Now today we would say, you know, that kind of prescribing, of course, is done with combination remedies, and there's a few homeopathic companies that do sell those remedies that, you know, if you have a headache, they'll say, okay, well, let's take all the remedies that deal with headaches, you know, the most important remedies that will deal with headaches, and they put them all into one remedy so that they make sure they get it all.
Well, it's a very allopathic thinking. It's broad spectrum. I mean, that's the thinking, and not realizing that these are energetic remedies, and the only thing that is really homeopathic is the art and science of prescribing and knowing the selection. I always say homeopathy is a verb, homeopathy is action, homeopathy is the dynamic between the patient and the practitioner, homeopathy is the dynamic between the medicine and the individual. So it's a very hard concept. It's something that has to be very relearned, really.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're supposed to be the Organon all the time. That's why we, as homeopaths, have to constantly be studying things that we forget and things that don't stay with us.
And each time we read it, we learn more and more because we get to be better practitioners. So then we have here in aphorism number 169, he also has a reference to aphorism 272.
Two, right.
Okay. And I looked that up. In that section of the Organon, he's giving us instructions how to prescribe and give the remedies. So here he says in aphorism 272, such a globule placed dry upon the tongue is one of the smallest doses for a moderate recent case of illness. Here but few nerves are touched by the medicine. A similar globule crushed with some sugar of milk and dissolved in a good deal of water and stirred well before every administration will produce a far more powerful medicine for the use of several days. Every dose, no matter how minute, touches on the contrary many nerves. So here he's giving us specifics about how to give the dose, that if you have the pellets from the store in the little bottle and you take out one dry pellet and put it on the tongue or under the tongue as it's sublingually placed, then you're getting a small dose, and you're getting one dose in this illness. And he says a few nerves are touched by the medicine. But then he's talking about, this is in the Organon of Medicine, Edition 6, where he gives water doses and repeated doses, which is something that must be learned, that when you put the remedy, the globule, into water and you stir it to energize the water, you take a teaspoon, and that's your dose. You don't have to take the whole glass. You just take a teaspoon, and then he says that's going to produce even a more powerful medicine for the use of several days. So if the person needs it over and over again, we know when they're, although he prefers a single dose, and that's it, he'd love to see everyone cured with just a single dose. But sometimes I personally have had where I've fallen down the staircase and really hurt myself badly, or I've stubbed my toe, or I've dropped a can. I seem to do a lot on my toes. I've dropped a can on my toe or something. That hurts really, really bad. And one dose doesn't always take care of it. I put it in water, and every 10 or 15 minutes or every half an hour, you might need a little boost with that remedy. So I've gone on and on about that. What do you have to say?
Well, what I wanted to say, which what I've got in my own notes about it, is that one of the things that you do, only in addition to what you didn't mention, was that the medicine, a dry dose, only touches on a few nerves, whereas when you put it in liquid, right, because it's in water and it's so totally dispersed, it goes through like the blood-brain barrier very quickly, and it'll touch many, many nerves. And that's the difference between the two ways of dosing somebody, you know, and it's quite interesting.
And I've found a single dry dose is also extremely powerful. It's long-lasting. It works very, very well, especially under the care of a professional homeopath, especially if you are on target with your similimum. You're going to see immediate response. And I recently, one of my friends came hobbling in on a high-heeled shoe and one sock because she smashed her toes into a metal ball on the bottom of a chair. And, like, the whole foot was swollen. She couldn't even put it in any shoe.
It hurts me just thinking about it.
I'll tell you, those things are, wow, they hurt. And I gave her a very high dose, one pellet, a very tiny number 10 dose of Arnica. Immediately, she started to feel a difference. And when she went home, she was able to put her foot into a shoe, which I assure you, when you have a remedy, when you have an arnica pain of a bruise, a contusion, a black and blue, and a bump like that, you don't want anything touching your skin. So she was able to get her shoes on when she got home, which was totally miraculous. Of course, it didn't take overnight to heal, but tremendous amount of improvement. So that's the kind of thing that we're looking at in homeopathy. Okay, also in aphorism number 272, since we went there, there is a link to aphorism 158, or that might be a footnote, that says these globules retain their medicinal virtue for many years if protected against sunlight and heat. Thus, as a matter of fact, one person asked me just yesterday, how long, you know, I told her I had some remedy kits. She said, you know, I think I have one from a long time ago when I moved, and I don't think it's any good. I asked her, did you throw it away? She said, I still might have it. She didn't think it would be any good because it was so old. And I told her that Hahnemann's remedies from his day, 200 some years ago, are still good. So this is basically what he's saying. If we protect them in a cool, dark place away from the sun and heat, they're still good.
You know, I don't know how it is in the States, but on our tubes, Health Canada, we have to have expiration dates.
Yes.
You probably have the same thing with the FDA.
Yes,
and that
we do.
Is, yeah. But and I always say the expiration date is there just because it needs to be there for regulation of Health Canada, but it means nothing. We're still using remedies that have, you know, that were made with 200 years ago. People are still using kits that have been handed down to them.
Family,
you know,
to family.
Absolutely.
Generation to generation.
Still good. They're still good.
And that's because people don't understand the concept that it's just an energetic form that's held in the milk sugar pellets or in the tincture, in the diluting liquid, the alcohol and water. It's just energy. So we know energy cannot be matter. What is it? What's good old Einstein say, our friend?
About
matter,
matter
cannot be destroyed. E equals MC squared.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard that one.
E equals MC squared. I know you've heard of it. Okay.
I understand it. You didn't ask me that.
Oh. I was kind of twisted up here. Okay, so we're going to do fast aphorism number 170 before the show ends today. He says, hence, in this, as in every case where a change of the morbid state has occurred, the remaining set of symptoms now present must be inquired into. And without paying any attention to the medicine, which at first appeared to be the next in point of suitableness, another homeopathic medicine, as appropriate as possible to the new state now before us, must be selected. It's exactly what you said, Marilyn. If it should so happen, as is not often the case, that the medicine which at first appeared to be the next best seems still to be well adapted to the morbid state that remains, so much the more will it merit our confidence and deserve to be employed in preference to another. So on the one hand, he's saying, don't pay attention to the remedy that you just gave, because if it's not suitable, then toss it aside and move on. Go forward to the next one. But then he's saying, as it may so happen, giving that one remedy may affirm and confirm your original selection. Is that what you're getting from aphorism number 170?
Yeah, and I was just looking at my notes, and here's a tie-in to Einstein. Are you ready?
Yes, please.
Always re-examine the case. It's always a new picture. And if you're juggling between A and B, it might be C.
I was thinking of energy cannot be created or destroyed. And you're giving me A, B, C.
You know,
my
skills are not that highly tuned. I'm sorry.
But I love your quote. And the other day, my sister said, well, just give me the alphabet and we'll figure out the words.
Or, I like that one.
Or actually, she said, God will figure out the words. So anyway, I really...
And we make babble out of it.
Well, he can do whatever he wants with the words. He can turn us into babble, or we can... I think we're now on the road to really understanding and communicating with each other due to the internet, due to the fact that languages are being translated on the internet. And now we can look at the Organon. It's translated into so many languages, and we are reinterpreting. We're relearning what he had to offer. I think the internet is so marvelous for us to unify and get together. And let's see, we have... no time left today, and I want to thank all of the wonderful listeners. Please tell us who you are and tell us your names, and come back and visit us again. We love to have you. Marilyn, you're great.
So are you, Deb. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, we're going to close the show. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with host Debbie Brock on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to take your Organon off the shelf and read it.